The Attack Zone, Episode 6. Commons and uncommons that will shape your Age of Ultron draft. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Attack Zone, the podcast where Randy and I cover the A to Z of competitive dice masters. I am the Dave here, and with me is the aforementioned Randy. How are you, Randy?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, I am wiped out today. I had a little golf outing, and for whatever reason, it was a beautiful day. For whatever reason, though, I am just beat. I mean, absolutely wiped.
Well, playing a game as boring as golf could do that to you.
Ouch. No, it was a lot of fun. It's a skill game, Randy. I'm not surprised that you belittle it so. You got to have skill.
Yeah, apparently. It's just so far above me.
No, I was
outside all day as well. Had a family get together and then went to a child's birthday party where I may or may not have dressed up as Spider-Man and made an appearance, and so that was the highlight of my day.
Hey, well done. So do you are you available for hire?
I guess if people want to pay me, that'd be great.
So everybody, Randy will show up at your kid's birthday party dressed as Spider-Man. Or even at your birthday party. Whatever. You know, no discrimination.
Moving on.
Yes. So I am, if my voice sounds a little different or anything like that, I am a little wiped out. I'm a little stuffed up. So if I sound a little different, that's why. But I'm more than happy and more than excited to get through this episode. So let's dig right into the six-pack. Today, we have something we have not done before here, which is Dungeons & Dragons 6-pack. Now, my D&D draft experience is a little bit limited, but I have played some, well, limited within that. I've played plenty of stuff in set with D&D, played some sealed, played some Daredevil drafts, and so forth. So I feel pretty comfortable with just about all of the D&D cards at this point, though certainly I think all of the draft synergies have not been really laid out and discovered by everybody for this set. I don't think it's one that everybody drafted quite so much, which is unfortunate because it's a really awesome set.
Yeah, my experience is about the same as yours with this one. I've played some fantastic sealed matches with it. I love going through these cards when I'm building with teams. I think there's a lot of things that have yet to be tapped from D&D, even though it's been out for months. Yeah, not a whole lot of rainbow draft experience.
Right. So I think, though, playing sealed is with this set is going to have helped inform our discussion here because you're even more limited with sealed. You have this pool of cards and you just have to make it work, but you get to be a little bit more discriminating when you're playing in draft. So let's dig in here. This happened to be all commons and uncommons, and it also happened to be a split, like 6 and 6. So let's see what we have. Let's start with the commons. We have Gelatinous Cube, Lesser Ooze. That's the 4-shield monster. Whenever a character is knocked out, you can pay a shield to have Gelatinous Cube capture it. You can also, when he attacks, when this Jello Mold attacks, you may assign one opposing character to block it. I like the capturing. It's a nifty little bit of removal here. How do you feel about the Gelatinous Cube?
I do like it. In a limited format such as the draft, the capturing ability could be very useful. Your opponent isn't going to always have an answer for it. I do like it in this scenario.
I agree with that. Pit Fiend, 4-bolt lesser fiend. It's a monster. It's evil. It's equipable. After you field your first Pit Fiend each turn, your fiends cost 2 less to purchase to a minimum of 1 for the rest of the turn. Now I'll say this. That's kind of cool if you know you're going to get a whole bunch of pit fiends, but I don't feel like that's necessarily realistic in the draft format.
Nope, I completely agree with you. If you could
get a 4 of, he's something that might be passed up, and his stats are not bad.
Yeah, if you can have 4 dice on him, then by all means, you know, go ahead and field him and load up for the rest of that turn, and you just got good stats at a cheap cost, but yep. I think he'd be hard-pressed, even though he is very conditional, to have 4 of them passed your way.
I agree. It can happen. I managed to get four of the Hawkman dice. It really helps when other forms of the character are not that great. Like, especially if it's an uncommon and the common is not that awesome, then you have a good chance of getting some dice. But in this case, this is a common, it might be a little harder. Not that this is a great card, but it could help in draft to get those characters. Next up, Umber Hulk, Lesser Beast, 6 shield. When fielded, choose an energy type. Your opponent cannot field characters of that type next turn. I like what it offers. I'm a huge fan of the Umber Hulk rare. I like what this card offers, but at 6 cost, I feel like this comes up a little too late in the game to matter.
I couldn't agree more. I love the ability, especially going into a rainbow draft. Your opponent might not have, you know, multiple win conditions. It might be all their eggs are in one basket, and if you can block them from fielding that character, that's great. But yeah, 6 cost, potential fielding cost of 3. I think that's, you're waiting too long to get that out.
Now, that said, he can be a bomb. He gets good stats. I mean, he really does. He can attack pretty well, and he defends all right, too. You know, he tops out at 7-5, but even on his level 1 phase, he's a 5-3. So, in that sense, he's not a horrible bomb. But, yeah. All right, next up is Red Dragon, Lesser Dragon. This is an evil monster. You evil monster. He has Breath Weapon 2. field Red Dragon for free if your opponent has 2 or more non-NPC characters in the field. And he has that global where you pay a bolt and your next action die costs 2 less and you deal damage to your opponent's face. What do you think, Randy? I like this card a lot.
Love it.
Me too.
I think in the first ever just full D&D game I played, my opponent got this out. And because it's 7 cost, it's usually coming out late in the game, and I definitely had, you know, more than 2 non-NPC characters in the field, and my opponent was able to get him out for 3. The 7 cost might be hard to achieve, depending on what else you get in the rainbow draft, but if you do get him, then, yeah, you're looking at that free fielding.
If you get him and pick up a common limited wish and some other fun stuff, you can just discount all day.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really do like it. Right now, this is actually my leader in the clubhouse.
I agree.
And we'll talk about why later if he ends up being the card. I don't know yet because I haven't looked through all of this. I've only sorted it. Frost Giant, 6 bolt, lesser elemental, evil, equipable monster. Frost Giant can only be blocked by 2 or more characters. I do like that can only be blocked by kind of ability. But we are in this format going to have less blocker control than we would have to make that work in other formats. And so I would have to say this is a pass.
It's good. And I mean, he's got monster stats, but I don't see him being better than that common red dragon.
No. I mean, the difference between a 6 and a 7 can be big, but yeah, red dragon gives you some utility with those action dice too. Then troll. The Lesser, it's a 5-fist evil-equipable monster. He has Regenerate, so you can reroll him when he's knocked out and put him back out there, potentially. At the beginning of your turn, spin this character up 1 level. So he does get a little bit more powerful. His stats are 3-3, 4-3, and 5-5, just for reference. It's an intriguing choice. I don't know that I want an ability that takes advantage of KOs when it's a monster, when it's D&D, with adventurers getting experience.
Yeah.
I don't want him to get KO'd.
Yeah. I mean, if he's KO'd, he comes back, but that also really opens himself up to being exploited multiple times.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So I'm not a fan. All right, Half Dragon, the Greater. It's a 4-bolt good monster. While active, dragons cost you 1 less to purchase to a minimum of 1. When active, when you field a dragon, deal 1 damage to your opponent. Now, there are a lot of dragons outside of the starter set, and we just discussed one of them. But there aren't a ton of dragons outside of the starter set. If Half Dragon was in my second pack, I think this would be something that I would pick with the red dragon. But as it stands in the same pack, I don't know that I can take this because I don't know that I have dragons. I do have a... I did sit out a second pack here. In that one, we do not have any dragons whatsoever. We do have the common half-dragon sitting in that one. So that might be a choice with the red dragon. And that tells me a little more that I like the red dragon. Yeah, not a ton of dragons outside of the starter. There are lots of them, but not a ton just in draft.
You are stealing the words right out of my mouth.
All right, then.
Yeah. You said it.
Alrighty.
I like the half dragon, but not as my first pick, and I would need other dragons in that second set of six boosters.
Agreed. All right, Whereat is a four-mask, greater lycanthrope, evil, equipable monster. While active, your evil characters with a purchase cost of three or less get plus one, plus one. Nifty ability, plenty of evil to go around in this set, but this doesn't give me the utility of our clubhouse leader.
Nope.
Now, let's say in absence of Red Dragon, how do you feel about this card?
I'd have to look at some numbers to give you...
3-1, 4-1, 4-3, total fielding cost of 2.
Yeah. Well, when I say look at numbers, I mean, how many evil characters are there with a cost of 3 or less? I mean, I know there's a lot. I mean, I think there's
quite a bit. Yeah, off the top of my head, there's the kobolds and the Sturge.
The skeletons.
The orcs, those zombies. Zombies are neutral,
yeah.
You're right. My goodness, you're right. Some of these Intarim are evil, if I recall correctly, though that's not a monster.
Yeah.
It's just evil characters, yeah, okay. Yeah, some of the Intarim are evil.
I do like it. And you know, in this format, that really might not be a bad choice, but I don't see it beating the utility of the Red Dragon right now.
I'm looking right now in the second pack, there's a Half-Orc Fighter, which is a three-fist evil character, obviously with equipable, and this is the rare one. When you field it, you may immediately use the equip ability. Of course, we don't have any gear dice here that we noticed. We'd have to check the rainbow if this were a real draft.
Yeah.
That could be pretty awesome because he also gets that big bonus when he's equipped. But nonetheless, let's move on. Uncommon Manticore, while active, deal 1 damage to each opposing character immediately after it is fielded.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Absolutely. We saw this with Dave Walsh at Worlds. He took this to combat some of the swarm that was out there, among other things.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm the only... the Kobold is, on level 3, the only level that would survive being fielded with the Manticore in play. I know the Sturge has considerably low defense. Yeah, Sturge has 1 defense on all sides.
I'll say that what I don't like about this is that while I can KO stuff, I'm also giving my opponent ramp, especially on those sidekicks.
Yes.
And I don't know that that's something I want in a draft where ramp is, you have to work a little harder for it.
Yeah, especially this set. I don't really want to see my opponent field 3 sidekicks just to be able to send him to the prep area for next turn. I like the card because of what it stops, but because of this set, looking at the Rainbow Draft format, I think it can hurt you just as much, if not more, than it can help you.
Agreed. Okay, the Zombie is our neutral greater undead. During the attack step, you may... Oh, it's a 2 shield. During the attack step, you may pay shield to prevent all damage to a zombie. I like that it's a cheap character with... not horrible stats, but it's not anything that really impresses me.
This is one of those characters that if I drafted D&D more, I would get an idea for how many zombies would get passed to me. If I could get a couple of these zombies and, you know, guarantee that I could have 3 or 4 dice on it, then you know what? I might take this over the Red Dragon. During the attack step, you may pay a shield to prevent all damage. That means you can prevent it from getting knocked out to give your opposing adventurers experience, and it can stop the overcrush of that purple worm that I'm sure everyone is going to be after for that win condition.
Sure. That's not a bad call. And the common isn't like anything excellent, so it's possible you would get this passed to you. The common is just after a zombie is knocked out in an attack step, roll that die. If you roll a character face, return it to the field. Otherwise, place it in your prep area. That's nothing stellar, so it is possible that this gets passed. I see what you're saying there. I don't know that it would supplant it for me, but I certainly see the merit.
Yeah. One thing I've been looking at it on a constructed team is pairing that zombie up with the uncommon magic helmet. This equipped character cannot be affected by your opponent's action dice or character abilities. So if you put that on that zombie, all of a sudden it can't be affected by action dice, character abilities, and you have the option to prevent all combat damage. That zombie could be in the game on your defensive side for the long haul. I mean, you need the magic helmet to do it. But with all that said, I still think I'd take the red dragon over the zombie, just because that one zombie die is not going to get the job done on its own, but one red dragon die is going to help you significantly.
Good enough. All right, Owlbear is a five-fist neutral monster here. When fielded, knock out an adventurer. Adventurer removal is nice in this set, especially if you're going monster heavy, and this thing's stats aren't bad. Not at all.
No, I do like the Owlbear. Still doesn't beat the Red Dragon for me, though.
Yeah, so what is it about the Owlbear that doesn't quite get there, then? Like, let's just talk the merits of the Owlbear in general. I mean, adventurer removal, I guess, is nice. There are plenty of adventurers that will mess with you in the set. There are even more in the starter, though, than I think the ratio you're going to find in draft, and that's, I think, part of the problem. There's, like, what, the half-orc fighter is an adventurer that's not in the starter.
Correct. The elf wizard.
Elf wizard. And what else? I'm not sure.
That might be it. I know the halfling thief, the human paladin, they're both in the starter. The dwarf cleric is in the starter, correct?
Oh, wait, no, you're right. Yeah, no. Well, let's see here. Half-orc fighter, elf wizard, and dwarf cleric are the three that are not in the starter.
Okay. And that's nine. I think there's other better adventurer hate. I mean, even though this is just, I mean, knock one out. I like one of the other owlbears that can force the adventurers to block. So, you know, once the owlbear comes into play, then you might be able to do some stuff with it. This is just when it's fielded, your opponent might not have their adventurer out yet. If they don't have an adventurer out, then you just wasted that when fielded ability.
That's true, and it's not like this is a total fielding cost of four.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, and then, I mean, worst case scenario, you have your own adventurer out. It doesn't say you may knock out an adventurer.
It says knock out an adventurer, so you might have to knock out your own.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's absolutely true. In fact, that's a big deterrent there. you would have to knock out your own if there was not an opposing adventurer. You would have to.
Mm-hmm.
That's no doubt. All right, Treant, Greater Beast, is a five shield good monster. While active, evil characters cost one more to purchase. Global pay a shield, prevent the next two damage that you, the player, takes from an ability or action die this turn. I like Treant, except that I think that at five cost, by the time you get him out there, your opponent's purchased the meat of what they need. Maybe there's one other thing, and I don't like putting our energy on taxing our opponent. I like the global, but depending on what I'm doing, I don't necessarily want to give that global to my opponent.
Yeah, I think if it's so hard to draft this character, you know, in advance, if you start putting your team together and you realize you have a bunch of neutral and good characters, then yeah, Treant might be a great pickup, you know, the last three or four characters, and I think he'll stay around in a rainbow draft until you get to that point. But there's no way I could take him early.
Yeah, I agree. I think it comes back to that red dragon. So in the second pack that I've alluded to a couple of times here, there is a kobold, which intrigues me.
Hmm.
And if I see lots of kobolds out there, that's something I think about taking, though they could go fast. Really what I would look for is red dragon, limited wish, maybe grab an elf wizard if I can.
Mm-hmm.
And go from there. And honestly, the basic actions that I might bring, I could go crazy burn and bring a magic missile and power bolt and just try and win a race.
Yeah.
There are worse options. And in draft, if your opponent's your opponent has their plan and they're going to stick to it, and they're not going to necessarily be hip to what you're doing. Unless, I mean, they're going to see that you aggressively start to buy those things, but generally they're going to follow your lead on something like that, and you can do that with Red Dragon all by himself.
Yeah, I do want to say that Kobolds would be a dangerous pick when you're just playing D&D, because that uncommon Kobold that everyone loves, you know, has to attack if there's an adventurer in play. And if they're attacking, the adventurer's going to knock them out, and all of a sudden, I mean, you get them in the prep area to reroll for next turn, but you're not taking advantage of that swarm ability that you probably brought them along for.
That's absolutely true. And now that I'm looking here, it's actually the common Kobold anyway, which wouldn't really help us out at all. Another card that's in this second pack that I like is the rare Umber Hulk, in fact, which is 5 cost. When it's fielded, you reroll all opposing level 1 and 2 characters. And then those
would be it would be a real tough decision between that half dragon you mentioned was in that second pack and that rare Umber Hulk. If we knew we were taking the red dragon out of this one, it would be a tough choice.
I'll tell you what, I like Umber Hulk so much, and I think it's gone really unrespected in the larger competitive meta, like in terms of unlimited games. And if I was in a position where I did not have the rare Umber Hulk, I would draft that in a heartbeat and just figure that half dragon is going to wheel or I'm going to get one.
Yeah. Not a bad strategy.
That one's going to come back. It depends on the rainbow, but Umber Hulk does good stuff, and he could win me the game all on his own, depending on what I'm able to do around him. All right, so Red Dragon it is, and we'll see where it could go from there. I think Red Dragon can do a lot all on his own for you, and if you can get him out, if you could get that limited wish, which he'll give you a discount for himself, you can really knock some heads together. So, okay, well, let's get into our feature topic then. Age of Ultron comes out, well, let me think, tomorrow from when this drops, if I'm doing my time traveling the right way. Yeah, it comes out tomorrow. Haha, how about that? Some of you might have it in hand at this point because there are some places I know had a little bit early. So we want to talk about what we're doing. You know, there are so many people, myself included, we are having different kinds of release events. We're doing a draft on Thursday night for the game.
Yeah, we are doing the same.
Oh, good. Yeah. And we have to talk about, like, what are some of those cards that we're going to see that will impact our draft? And specifically, what are some common and uncommon cards that we're expecting to see that will, you know, again, impact the draft? And so we're just going to throw out a couple, take some turns here. We've each identified a few. We've talked with some of the other guys on the site and gotten some ideas there as well, just in case we have a lot of overlap. We have other areas to go. But commons and uncommons are the cards that are most likely to matter when you're drafting, because you're going to see the most of them. You'll get those rares. You'll get those super rares. You might take it because you don't have it, especially if it's a new set like this or if you open a zombie. but the commons and uncommons are the ones that do work for you. They're the ones that win.
Yes, if you are doing a rainbow draft to win the rainbow draft, then you got to pass on that rare that might not, you know, be quite as good as the common or uncommon.
Yeah, and you at least have to know what commons and uncommons to look for that can help you win. You know, certainly in DC, the identification was made pretty early on about Firestorm and Cheetah. And then also, of course, what Red Tornado could do for you. You know, or some of the, you know, Cheetah, Black Manta.
Yeah.
Or some of the Overcrush stuff that you could do. Things like that. Those were identified pretty early on. So we want to try and do some of the same here. Make some predictions. Maybe we'll turn out to be phenomenally right. Maybe we'll be horribly wrong. I don't know. But let's find out. Randy, what is one that you have identified? Tell me what it is. I'll read the text and we can discuss.
The first one I want to look at is Gamora, Assassin.
Yes. I had this one in mind as well. Gamora, Assassin is a three-fist guardian. Gamora KOs each enemy die she deals combat damage to. So she touches you and you're gone.
She's got decent attack stats for her cost, too. She's a three-cost character, and she can have 3, 4, or 4 attack.
Uh-huh.
if you can manage to bring the Ultron drone that can force things to block, then the multiple points of attack become very important, being able to distribute out, you know, a point of damage here, a point of damage there, a point of damage there, and it can be mass removal. That nice attack stat, I mean, that's also enough for an opponent to say, I don't feel like taking four damage this early on in the game. Looks like I got a block with something, and it doesn't matter what that thing is, it's gone.
That's true. Now, I will say that Ultron Drone Global that you're talking about is a double fist global. You're going to pay out the nose to do that.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's got to be, if you're going to do that, that's got to be like, this wins you the game. Like, it's got to be Gamora Assassin clears the way for something else. And at that point, I don't care what's blocking. I'm using that as a win condition. No, I like this one because of the removal that it has. You have things to target in the set. But actually, the Gamora that I'm a little bit interested in is the Uncommon. It's a four-fist Guardian. She has Team Watch. So when you field an affiliated character, you choose an opposing die. It must block one of your Gamora dice if able. You choose which before your opponent declares blockers. And it has a global, which basically turns anything you want into Deadpool Jack. Pay fist, KO a blocked or blocking die after damage is dealt. Now, you give your opponent that global, too. And I recognize that might not always work out well for you. But that's going to be an intriguing global to play with as we continue to move forward in a meta where, you know, Hulk matters and whatever else. But just in this set, to be able to knock out whatever is something that's blocked or blocking, you know, you have to think about it too, and what's your opponent going to do with that fist that's sitting on the other side of the board that they did not use. But you provide that same threat yourself. And if you're drafting with this in mind, then you're prepared for it.
That global scares me. Man, I do not think that I would want to bring that global to a game. I would be too afraid of, you know, giving that to my opponent as well.
Uh-huh. I think obviously that's a risk whenever you're dealing with a global ability, but I think if I'm going to bring that in a draft, then I'm prepared to have that on my team more than my opponent's prepared to use that against me. It's there, and they might be able to take advantage of it at times, but if I'm building a team with the thought in mind that I have this kind of removal in there, if you look around the set, there is not a lot of removal at all.
No. No, there is not. In
this case, you're gifting that removal to your opponent, but you're giving it to yourself in a way that hopefully you're prepared to use. Now, I wouldn't just take this to take this. If you have no idea how that fits, this does not go on your team.
And maybe that's more of what I was saying. I want to play around with this card more. I want to, you know, see it in action. I want to get a feel for it. And once I start to see, you know, see the opportunities, learn how to use it the best, then I might draft it. But I'm a little tentative right now.
Fair enough. Nonetheless, I think these will both be impactful cards. Certainly that global will be pretty impactful. And if you are listening to this and you are a discriminating drafter with this game, definitely make sure that you understand when and how you can take advantage of that global being there. For sure. And understand how it can be used against you, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I guess we both kind of talked about one there. Randy, why don't you go ahead then with your next one?
Okay. I want to pick one that I think is a little more off the radar, because I haven't seen anyone else in our group mention it. But the common Enchantress, Amora. She's a 6-cost mass character, villain affiliation. When fielded, deal 1 damage to your opponent for each of their Avenger character dice in the field. I looked at some numbers. If you just look at commons and uncommons, because that's what primarily you're going to go up against in a rainbow draft, there are 24 cards that have the Avengers affiliation, commons and uncommons.
Sure.
That's a lot of Avengers you're going to see. And we know that there's some low-cost ones as well. Black Widow, Giant Man, those, and they might even appear later on this list. But I think Enchantress, I mean, she's 6 cost, so she's going to be a little bit later, but I would have you know, depending on what dice I see in the rainbow, I would have every reason to believe that she could do, you know, 4 or 5 damage to my opponent when fielded, just because of the popularity of Avengers in set.
I think that's a great point by you. Yes, this could absolutely be an impactful card given all of the Avengers that are in this set. Your opponent will have some in the field. They're going to be there. And some of them are quite cheap to get out there as well. Now, this isn't a guaranteed buy every game, but it's one that if you're going to go Avengers heavy, you certainly have to know that it's there. And maybe that's a deterrent to go pure Avengers, that if you see this on the other side of the board, you need to have maybe an alternative plan or know that you can beat your opponent before they ever get to this.
Yes.
So.
And her stats aren't too bad.
No, they're not.
Her 3 attack stats going across are 5, 6, and 6. So you get, you know, a certain degree of consistency there. Her defense is 3, 3, and 6. A little bit shakier there on level 1 and 2 with defense, but I think for that consistent attack power and the ability, I do like this Enchantress.
I absolutely agree with you. Good choice. All right. Well, the first one I'd like to talk about is the common Loki Laufey-san. This is a 5-bolt villain. While Loki is active once per turn, you may pay bolt to deal 1 damage to a character. The character loses all of its abilities until end of turn. You may use this ability whenever you could use a global ability. I like that it gets rid of abilities. It's like a pocket Constantine or a pocket prismatic spray.
That you can do on your opponent's turn.
Yes. Exactly, without making that available to your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really nifty card. He's a solid blocker. His attack stats are nothing too special, but he's a solid blocker. And while there's direct damage in this set, there's not as much of it as we have seen in other, sets. So, you know, I see the possibility of going a little bit more controlling as viable. At this point, could change when we play the games, as somewhat viable. I think Loki Laufey-san really fits within that.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a great pick in drafts. I think we're going to see him on constructed teams. I think this is just a great card all around for every format moving forward.
I absolutely agree. I think he's gonna make appearances in constructed as well. Absolutely, I do.
Mm-hmm. The only deterrent I could possibly see with the rainbow draft is, I mean, just the 5 cost. And, I mean, mm-hmm. we're talking about other characters that have 5 or higher cost as well. But it's not quite as guaranteed as that Constantine you mentioned, where that's a 2 drop. You can get that out 3rd turn of the game. Loki, it's going to be a little bit longer before you can get him out.
Oh, it sure is. But I care about getting him out and disabling whatever big thing my opponent is going to try and kill me with. Now, of course, my opponent would still be able to attack with that thing, but this is targeted surgical strike at whatever abilities are most important to you when you're trying to win.
Oh, especially if your opponent has Overcrush.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can get rid of that Overcrush and, okay, you know, let that big Hulk attack. I'll block him with a sidekick, and I'll be no worse for wear.
Exactly. All right, tell me about one of yours.
One of mine. I want to look at the uncommon Ultron Drone, 1 of a 1,000,000.
Ah, okay.
3 cost fist, villain. Capture each enemy character blocking Ultron Drone and deal damage to the defending player equal to its fielding cost. And then return it at the end of turn.
Mm-hmm.
It has the global I mentioned earlier. Pay 2 fists. Choose an opposing character die to block a character die of your choice this turn.
Yep.
The global just sweetens the deal with this one, because you're either going to get your Ultron Drone through to do damage, or your opponent's going to block it and take direct damage.
Right.
I mean, unless it's fielding cost of 0. That's the only way they can really get around that, I suppose.
Right, and you can force that, you know, that worst possible blocker for your opponent to block, like, into this block here. Yeah. I like this Ultron Drone quite a lot. I think others are going to too, and that might make it difficult to get, but I think it's very effective. I'm a fan of Ultron Drone as well. I kind of cheated a little bit, though. I think an impactful thing that we're going to see in drafts is Ultron New World Order combined with the common Ultron drone. Mm-hmm. So Ultron New World Order is the non-starter version of Ultron. He is six fist. While he's active, the first time you capture an opposing character each turn, he deals 3 damage to an opponent. And then Ultron Drone, simply two fist villain, capture any enemy character blocking Ultron Drone. So, and of course it has that same global. So now we have, in combination with Ultron, we have that guaranteed 3 damage every time that there's a block. Whereas, you know, with Ultron Drone 1 of a million, it does depend on the fielding cost. Now, that one works on its own.
Yes.
The other idea requires the Ultron to be there. But Ultron's a bomb in his own right. 5, 4, 6, 6, 7, 7. And if you're able to force blockers because you have that Ultron Drone out, so much the better.
And is that non-starter now, common this non-starter time around?
Yes, it is.
All right.
Now, if you can get uncommon Ultron Drone and Ultron, you are obviously dealing with some costs here. We have ways around that because you can use any basic action, so we have the polymorphs and whatever else. You have now the ability to capture, deal damage equal to the fielding cost, and do 3. So I expect to see a lot of shenanigans with capturing dice happen in Age of Ultron.
Yes.
Especially because of those 3 cards in tandem. You know, 2 of them are uncommon, 1 of them is common. I think that's really something special.
Yes, absolutely. The only reason I picked the uncommon is because he works alone. You can pick him up. You don't need to build a team around him. He can be a throw-on character to whatever team you're using.
Regardless, I would pick him up. Whichever Ultron drone I'm picking up, even if I'm picking up the common, I'm hoping to find the uncommon later. And I'm hoping to find, even if I pick up the common or uncommon, whatever it is, too many common words here, then I'm looking to grab that Ultron too if I'm going capture.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be my late entry point. That's my bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I hope to be able to draft into in this set for sure. All right, so once again, we each kind of took turns there. So tell me about another one, Randy.
Well, earlier I mentioned some low-cost Avengers that Enchantress could take advantage of, and one of those is the common Giant Man.
Ah, yes, I have this too.
3-cost mask, Avenger affiliation, and his stats are ridiculous. He can be a 1-1, a 4-4, or a 7-7.
Yes. Yeah, I think this will be something that impacts drafts because the fact is you have a potential 7-7 for 3. Now, I kind of like the uncommon that can spin himself up or the rare, even. I know we're not talking about rares, but the rare where you can, like, re-roll him when he attacks and maybe do something. But if you have ways of spinning him around, I like both the common and the uncommon Giant Man for sure.
I agree. I had both of those flagged. I think, given the choice, I'd rather go with the common. Yeah, the uncommon has a chance to spin himself up, but I think I'd rather go for the cheap gamble where he could be on 7-7 and not need to spin himself up. You might be wasting that extra purchase cost.
Sure.
So, How about you go ahead and do one?
Okay, so this is another one where I sort of cheated a little bit and kind of went with some things that I like in tandem. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is Phil Coulson, Man with the Plan. It's the uncommon 3-shield affiliation character. When he attacks, you may spend 1 generic energy to field a sidekick or shield agent from your used pile. I will note that I also like Inspirational Leader in this role as well. When Phil Coulson is active, your sidekicks and shield agent characters get +1 attack. In fact, I probably like that one a little more, so let's forget that I talked about the uncommon. Combine that with the common shield agents, where on the burst phase, which is 2 of its phases, when fielded, give another shield agent +1/+1 until end of turn. Just the fact that you can start, like, chaining these shield agents, pulling them from used potentially, or just buffing them, however you do it, You have all these weenies that all of a sudden can become quite a bit more potent. Depending on which version of characters you're using, you can just be pulling them and fielding them out of your used pile, which how often do you ever get to do that? They're flying at you all over the place, and that could be a really, really interesting aggressive team. So, I mean, imagine that you attack with that uncommon Phil Coulson. You spend one to field that shield agent that you just bought. Now it's there, and it's buffing your other attacking shield agent or whatever. I just think there are a lot of options there, and it all comes at a very low cost, and it all comes, again, at common and uncommon. I think there's synergy there that people are going to look to see if they can mess around with. Definitely something that can work aggressively. You probably need a way of dealing with other weenies when you're doing this, but in general, I think it's something fun that you'll see. How effective will it be? Time will tell, but I think it's something fun that you'll see.
Yeah, I could see that snowballing quickly being a fun team to pilot. The next one I wouldn't mind talking about is a character that, yeah, maybe she was on my list, maybe she wasn't, but then JT really sold me on her, and go ahead and don't let him know that, you know, he influenced my opinion here.
Yeah, I'm sure we won't tell him, and that he won't listen to this, and that we won't talk about it, and that...
Obviously, that would never happen.
No. So what is it? Don't leave us in suspense, man.
Captain Marvel, both the common and the uncommon.
Really?
Yes. The common Captain Marvel, 5-cost shield, Avengers... When Captain Marvel deals combat damage, draw a die, put it in your prep area.
Oh, yes, okay.
There are not a lot of options for ramp. This is one of them.
Okay.
And with her attack stats being 4, 5, or 6, you send her to attack, and you know your opponent's either taking damage or letting you prep a die.
Yep.
The uncommon, same cost, 5. When Captain Marvel deals combat damage, spin all of your character dice up one level. Man, does that work sweet with that common giant man.
Yeah, it sure does, and that's not a very expensive combination to pull off. I like that the ramp is whenever there's any combat damage. You know, the other option for ramp in the set that I want to bring up since we're on the topic is Jocasta Uncommon. 5-bolt, the first time she's damaged each turn, draw a die and put it in your prep area.
Mm-hmm.
So that could also proc each turn as well, but you have a little more control if your opponent attacks. Well, I'm blocking with this, and now she's dealing combat damage. If you attack with her, then obviously, unless you distraction her back or there's some other, you know, prevent all damage, she's doing combat damage there too. You have a little more control over this one.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know if she'd be a first pick in my draft, but she also does come with the finishing power. I mean, her level 3 face has 6 attack. That's not bad.
No, she really does. I would think with both with them being the most traditional ramp options that we have in the set, that both Jocasta and Captain Marvel will be something that we'll see here. All right, one more that we will bring up at one of our compatriot suggestions is Beast, Bouncing Blue Beast, a 2-fist, the lone X-Men in the set at Uncommon. If Beast is KO'd while attacking, gain 2 life. This is actually not that different from the way that we've seen Beast work in other sets. This one is just a little bit more of an aggressive Beast. And with stats like 2-1, 2-2, and 3-2, there's every chance in the world that he will be KO'd while attacking. Now, of course, you get captured, and that does nothing for you. But gaining 2 life, if you're going to wall up, gaining 2 life really can help mitigate whatever direct damage your opponent is doing to your face. I think this is a card that we'll see some play, especially because it's not going to be hard to get a couple of his dice. The common is not that great. So if you pick up the uncommon, you're probably going to see that common come around late. Unless people were just going for a cheap 2-fist character. And in that sense, I think the people will be going for the 2 costs that people will be going for will be like their shield agents and those Ultron drones and stuff like that in this set.
Yeah.
Versus the Beast. Yeah, because he doesn't fit any of the affiliations. You're not going to take advantage of any team watch or team work with this card. But I like it.
Yeah. And if you're going to use life gain, draft is the way to use it. I guess the place to use it, rather. Because people typically aren't going to be able to build up to that big 20-point swing in the Rainbow Draft. It's, you know, five here, you know, three or four there. So, like,
not if you wall up the right way.
Well, okay, true.
I'm agreeing with you. Like, that's not going to happen if you wall up right. I mean, it can happen if you leave yourself open to it. But, yeah, not if you wall up the right way. And having some beasts, perhaps even supported by that Loki that we mentioned earlier, is a way to kind of wall up and control the game at your pace. Then, of course, you just have to figure out how the heck you're going to win from there. And that's why some draft games go to time.
Yeah.
All right, so those are cards that we've identified to this point. We may be, again, incredibly right. We may be incredibly wrong. We don't know until the games start playing, but I'm really looking forward to digging in a draft this Thursday in this set. We've been talking about this set for so long, getting ready for it to come, and it's finally here. The cards look great. I love so much of the artwork that we see this time, and so much of the abilities. Team Watch and Teamwork seem to be, like, really, really fun abilities, what Heroic should have been in the first place. In general, I'm really looking forward to sitting down and playing the games.
Yeah. A new set coming out, I mean, it's always very exciting getting into that, you know, the first game with new cards, and I'm looking forward to it this week.
Yes, Randy, I absolutely agree with you. It's about time. Should be some fun. Yeah. So tell us what cards you're seeing stick out in the draft. What do we miss? What do you think we're wrong about? Let us know. By the way, make sure you get in touch with us via the forums, via Twitter, mailbag@thereservepool.com. Leave us some reviews on iTunes. We'd love to talk to you about that, too. Just all of those sorts of things, all those ways that you can keep in touch with us. We want to hear from you. So communication. Let us know what happens in those events. We want to hear about it. All right. Well, that takes us to the end of this episode of The Attack Zone. Thanks so much for listening to us yet again. This is Dave.
And this is Randy.
And thanks for listening to the Reserve Pool Network. See you next time.
Bye.